Good evening. I'm Henry Banks, senior producer and host of People of Color on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up in a few minutes, a conversation with Seth Currier and Flora Woodfork from the Damiano Center in downtown Duluth. The Damiano Center has been a fixture in the Twin Ports for more than 35 years. Also on the show, a previously aired segment honoring the life of Aretha Franklin, remembering greatly Aretha's work, especially during the Easter season. All of this coming up next on People of Color with Henry Banks after this news. Good evening, this is Henry Banks, and welcome to People of Color on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I am so honored and delighted to have in the studio tonight Seth Currier. He is the executive director of the Damiano Center. The Damiano Center is located in downtown Duluth. And Flora Woodfork, she is the lead cook in the Damiano Soup Kitchen. Flora is the all-around guru, as they say, when it comes to food. So we're going to have a really awesome, candid conversation. And Seth, I just want to start with you. If you could just take a moment and tell our listeners about Damiano Center, how long you've been around, and what are some of the things coming up that you're looking at doing there.
Yeah, so the Damiano Center has been around for 27 years. It's been around for 37 years. We just celebrated on March 15th, we just celebrated our 37th year anniversary. We're so excited about that. It's really a huge community effort. I mean, the Damiano Center, we have 7 programs that we offer, and then we have 7 other tenants that are also in the building that are renting from us. So it's really a community space that just a lot of people interacting and collaborating together. And it takes... There's 800 volunteers a year that come help us do what we do. So, in addition to the staff, and so it really is a community effort. It's been really an exciting time. I've been there for just over a year, just almost a year and a half, and I've just been so blown away by both the staff who are there and just the commitment and dedication, but also the community and just the support. And I just love being at the Damiano. It's just such a community effort. So would you like me to go into some of our programs
stuff
like
that? Absolutely. Help yourself.
Yeah. So our programs, our longest-running program, we served our first meal in 1982 on March 15th, and that was for our what was then called the Soup Kitchen, now called the Community Kitchen. And that's been our longest running program, and we have served meals ever since. We now serve 13 meals a week in that program, and I'll let Flora talk more about the community kitchen later. But that's probably our most well-known thing that we do.
So you've changed the name from Soup Kitchen to Community Kitchen. Mm-hmm. I think that has a better, more appealing sounding, if you will.
Yeah.
When you hear a soup kitchen, people think, that's just for poor people and, people who, what have you. Right, Flora?
Yeah, but we get all kinds of people. You have people that really has money and just come. And we have one table that I call our social club, which, ladies and gentlemen, and they seem to have a pretty nice little bit of money, but they enjoy coming and socializing. And it's kind of reminds me of, you see the older people sitting in McDonald's every morning and having coffee, just sitting and enjoying each other.
Right, and to have that social interaction is important because some people may not get that social interaction any other time of the week. So when they come together, I think that's very powerful.
Yeah, I think so. And then you have a lot of people, just single people, that don't want to cook a whole meal. They just buy themselves, and they could come there and have breakfast, lunch, and on the weekends, breakfast, lunch, and dinners. So I think it serves the public pretty well.
And so you're being kind of modest, Flora, I think, because you serve literally thousands of people a month?
Yes.
And so yeah, can you talk a little bit about what some of the things, you know, you're preparing meals, you're getting your volunteers set up to make the salad, to do whatever it needs for people. And so what is some of the things that you do to get prepared for serving that many people?
Well, first of all, I'm there before the start of my job. So I usually try to get there about 7, and I actually start, well, I start getting paid at 8, but I'm there preparing and setting up for my volunteers. So when they come in, they don't just be standing around waiting on me to get something prepared for them to start in on. So I like to come in and get the salad and stuff washed up. So when they come in, all they have to do is prep it. Mm. And then I figure out what the meal is going to be. A lot of times I don't know it till I get there. Yeah. So, and then I get to work on my meal while they're doing different things.
It's a labor of love for you, isn't it?
Yeah, well, if I'm not doing it there, I'm doing it at home. Right. So the way I kind of look at it, well, at least they're paying me.
Right on. But at least you're donating some time, too.
Oh, yeah, like. I donate a lot of time there, so. And well, it's fun. I enjoy it.
So, Seth, what do you think about an employee such as Flora, who has dedicated a lot of her time to so many thousands of people?
Yeah, there's times where Flora's serving thousands of people in a week. I mean, we can. There's times where we're serving up to 200 to 400 people a meal. And so Flora is definitely feeding the community. And, yeah, it's just an honor to work with her. I mean, Flora has a heart for people like you wouldn't believe. It's so.
I've seen her in action.
Yeah.
I've seen her in action.
Yeah. Well, she runs a tight ship in her kitchen and will put the volunteers and the guests in their place, but she also does it with a smirk. And we get more, we just get more calls and emails about how people loved working with Flora than any other staff that we have. And so, and I've told her that many times.
That's impressive, isn't it?
It's because she has such a huge impact.
Yeah, she certainly does. So talk about some other programs that the Damiano Center has and what they do in serving people also.
Yeah. So our other food program that we have is our Kids Kitchen, and that serves, we're open on Monday through Thursday from 3 to 6, and that's a drop-in center for kids in the neighborhood, and kids and their families are encouraged to come. And so it's an after-school program, and then it runs through the summer. And that's a great program because we have a healthy snack at 3, and then we have a meal at 5. And so kids and their families can eat every single night of the week because kids and their families are eating in Kids Kitchen Monday through Thursday, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we serve dinner in the community kitchen. So it's really just a great opportunity to have kids be able to get a healthy meal every day of the week. And that,
You have a couple of staff that work in there. Mm-hmm. You want to talk a little bit about them and what they do?
Yeah, so we have our program manager, Ashley Grimm, and she is in charge of that program, and then also our summer food corps, and I can talk about that in a second. But then we have two other staff that are in there as well, and our cook and our and an AmeriCorps that work in that office. And so together they feed the kids and do programming, and we have a lot of volunteers that come in and do programming on that at that event too, or that on those days, and doing arts and crafts. I just stopped by there on my way over here tonight, and they're making, they're actually decorating real goose eggs that the volunteer brought in from their home, and just coloring them and decorating them. So it's really a cool experience. I kind of wanted to sit down, but I told them I had to come over here to be on the radio.
Well, I appreciate that. That sounds like a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
You know, and so other programs.
Yeah. Our Summer Food Corps is a program it started out as a program of our Kids' Kitchen, but now it's expanded, and that's a youth employment program. We employ teenagers to do urban gardening in the Central Hillside. There's a plot up at Harbor Highlands, and they learn how to grow food. And we look at a lot of food justice issues and really look at what to do with the food. They get to make decisions on that once they grow it. And so we employ them. They're learning all these great skills on how to grow their own food. And then that food gets used in the kids' kitchen that those evenings once they harvest it. And so the kids are, we actually had kids arguing over who was going to finish the last broccoli. And so you don't have that very often, it's cool because the older kids are the ones that are growing it, you know, and so they've kids find it to be really cool. And so, but they're those teens then are the mentors for the younger kids. They help run the programming and stuff like that. So that's really a great program.
That sounds like a great program,
Yeah, we have a couple other programs as well. We have two clothing programs, our free store. That is just the program where people can come get a free bag of clothes a day no questions asked. And then we have our Clothes That Work, which is a employment. It helps people who have interviews coming up or to have maybe they have a job and they can come every 6 months and get a whole new set of clothes. And those aren't just business clothes or business casual. They're clothes for working in food service, nursing scrubs, construction clothes, whatever it might be. We try to have all sorts of for all types of employment. And then we have our Health Realization. It's a support group for individuals that are trying to overcome anything that might be a barrier in their life, but it is a lot of people do come for addiction, and so all the treatment centers in town send their people from their programs to our Health Realization on Wednesday nights from 7 to 8, and it averages anywhere from 70 to 120 people. I mean, it's a pretty significant group. And then we just started a women's only group on Sunday nights from 7 to 8, too. So that's a really great group. And then we have our community services, which is kind of our catch-all. When people are getting an apartment, they can get items for their new apartment. If they have their lease on them, we do transportation help, several different kinds of transportation help. We do hygiene help. We really just try, and then we do a lot of referrals. We have a free phone in there. We can do mailboxes for people and all sorts of stuff. So really just trying to interact with people wherever they're at. So
wow, so you, when you say catch-all, so for my listeners, when you say catch-all, you literally mean catch-all, right?
In some regard, or if we don't provide that service, it's referring to all of the agencies in the Twin Ports that do. And so in that regard, yeah, it does. It is a catch-all because we're trying to connect people with whatever services they might need.
We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to People of Color with Henry Banks on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Would you like to take this time to give a shout out to some of your other employees that are doing this remarkable work? You want to mention them? So
I want to mention all the people in the kitchen just so you know. I'm not talking all the time.
Okay, we have Michelle that's cooking training in the kitchen under me. And Maria drops in every now and then until she get put out. But and we have Richard doing maintenance. We don't. Well, it's only two cooks in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. So, and Kid Scaff only have one cook.
Okay.
So and then that's pretty much until Sandy gets back. She cooks sometime.
And Sandy is.
Sandy is my supervisor. Okay. I'm her supervisor sometimes.
Understood.
No, he joke like that, though.
Right.
He joke a lot like that. But, yeah, she's the manager over both kitchens, over Kids Calf and Soup Kitchen. Well, I still call it the Soup Kitchen.
Right on. So that's really good that you mentioned those folks because they're all doing great work as well.
Yeah, and Maria's
contributing to
community
everything.
Service.
Maria's in community services. So she's the one that handles the catch-all.
Yes, she handles the catch-all.
So, excuse me, my
and
listeners want to know.
She helps me out in the kitchen sometimes. Okay. So that's why I mess with all the time.
Very good. So the real reason I was hoping you all would come here is to talk about why there are still so many needs for your services in the community. You all have been around since 1982, as you say, 37 years, and there still needs to be your organization in existence. Why are people still struggling, I guess? Why is that still an issue? Because you're providing so many incredible resources, and there's still so many people that are struggling. Well, how can we deal with that?
Well, it has a lot to do with the economy, too. Didn't you know most jobs now, they're only hiring part-time. And then whatever assistance you're getting from the state or either rental assistance, if you get a part-time job, okay, whatever assistance you got, it affects it.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a part-time job, your rent go up, they cut your stamps, they cut your, it's like you really not going anywhere.
Yes.
So, to me, I feel like it's just the system is set up for failure.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't get people enough time to actually stand on their own. Because if they work a couple of days, you got them. They make a damn, you take a dollar. It's mm-hmm. So that's one of the reasons you got out there. And then you have this new thing they came up with, if they test them for drugs, if they've been smoking reefer, okay,
mm-hmm.
they take the stamps away, You're not just affecting that parent, you're affecting the kids.
Right.
So it's just a whole lot to do with the economy. We're just not going anywhere fast.
And
it happened, all of the blame don't lie on them because we have to take our part in that too.
Right.
But if the job's not there, and people tell you it's a lot of jobs out there, which there is a lot out there, but like I said, you're only getting minimum hours, you're getting minimum pay. So,
there has to be something. There has to be something to fall back on.
Yes.
Because you don't have those financial resources necessarily to get food.
Right.
So the Damiano Center is that strong resource.
Right.
In the neighborhood and in the community and in the region. You are the largest food kitchen outside of or north of the Twin Cities, is that correct?
Yeah, we say we're the largest emergency meal provider in northeast Minnesota. Yeah.
Okay. So that'd be north of the cities, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's that kind of work that people need to understand and know that you're doing every single day, right?
Yes.
Even though the Damiano Center has been around for 37 years, there are still people that don't know about the Damiano Center and the important work that you're doing.
And we take donations.
There you go. So,
yes,
thank you for mentioning that. Since you mentioned
yes.
that, say someone listening right now wants to send a donation to you or wants to get more information about the programs of Damiano Center. Can you give a number and how would you like to have that happen?
Yeah, the best place to look at our programs, find out what we're doing is to visit our website, which is damianocenter.org. It's damianocenter.org. And if you have questions or anything like that you're not getting answered on the website, you can give us a call. At our main line is 218-722-8708. And on there, there's opportunities to donate and things like that, lots of different opportunities. Again, it is a community effort, and everything we do at the Damiano is free. We do everything for free, and so that's where we really rely on the community to be able to help us in that effort, to partner with us to make a difference. And so, that's the best way. But if people want to call to come down and take a tour or come down for a meal or anything like that, we would love to do that. So just call ahead and let us know, and we can set a time, and we'd just love to show you the place. Yeah.
Sure. Give your number one more time, please.
Yeah, our number's 218-722-8708.
Thank you both for coming in and taking the time out of your very busy schedule to be here. Flora Woodfork, lead cook at the Damiano Center, and Seth Currier, executive director of the Damiano Center in downtown Duluth. Have a great evening and a great weekend.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
All right. I'm Henry Banks, and you're listening to People of Color on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to People of Color as we continue to celebrate the life and legacy of an American icon, Miss Aretha Franklin. She passed away recently at the age of 76.
Free! on the morning rain. I used to feel so uninspired. And when I knew I had to face another day, Lord, it made me feel so tired. Before the day I met you, life was so unkind, and you're the key to my peace of mind. 'Cause you make me feel, you make me feel, you make me feel like a natural woman.
Woman.
When my soul was in the lost and found,
Miss Aretha Franklin grew up in the 1950s Detroit, Michigan era. She began her singing career at New Bethel Baptist Church in Detroit, and the church was pastored by her father, the late Reverend C.L. Franklin. Her father organized the 1963 Detroit Walk to Freedom. That was the largest such walk for civil rights in the United States until the March on Washington, where Dr. King gave his I Have a Dream speech. That also occurred in the same year. Aretha's father and Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. were very good friends. At the tender age of 16, Aretha went on tour with Dr. King shortly after recording her first album. She would sing approximately 10 years later at the funeral of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
But I know my change is gonna come. Oh yeah. He said it's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. Thank you.
Dr. Martin Luther King's daughter, Bernice King, Dr. Bernice King, said Aretha Franklin was a shining example of how to use the arts to support social change. This is what she said. As a daughter of the movement, she not only used her voice to entertain, but to uplift and inspire generations through songs that have become anthems. Reverend Jesse Jackson and Aretha Franklin were friends for over 60 years. Reverend Jackson was a civil rights activist, as was Aretha Franklin. And here's what Reverend Jackson said about his friend. She helped pay for many civil rights tours and campaigns while Dr. King was alive. She held free concerts, housed activists, and helped them fundraise. She was an inspiration, not just an entertainer. She has shared her points of view from the stage and challenged people to register to vote, to stand up for decency. Reverend Al Sharpton called Aretha Franklin a civil rights and humanitarian icon. This is what he said. Most people knew Aretha for her chart-stopping hits that cut to the core of the human experience, no matter your background. But I knew Aretha for the civil rights and humanitarian icon that many forget. The Aretha that uplifted her community and the civil rights movement. Here's what President Barack Obama said about Aretha Franklin. Nobody embodies more fully the connection between the African American spiritual, the blues, R&B, rock and roll, the way that hardship and sorrow were transformed into something full of beauty and vitality and hope. Aretha helped define the American experience. In her voice, we could feel our history, all of it, and in every shade, our power and our pain, our darkness and our light, our quest for redemption, and our hard-won respect. May the Queen of Soul rest in eternal peace.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to People of Color on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're celebrating the life and legacy of Miss Aretha Franklin. We'll be right back. Welcome back to People of Color. We close the show tonight with Miss Aretha Franklin singing Amazing Grace in the New Bethel Baptist Church in Detroit, Michigan. Aretha Franklin began her singing career in the African American Church. She passed away on Thursday, August 16th, at the age of 76. May she rest in peace.
know, and that same, old green, they call it God's amazing. Oh, amazing. Amazing grace.
Save
with Jesus.
Save.
Coming up next week on People of Color, Dr. Reggie Jackson, head griot of the America's Black Holocaust Museum in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, joins us to give us a history lesson about the African and African American diaspora. That's Dr. Reggie Jackson from America's Black Holocaust Museum next week on People of Color.